Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Lisa McGovern from Wines Australia.
I'm great, Chris. How are you?
Do you want to describe what your role is? Because you're a bigwig in Wines Australia now.
Yep, I look after Wines Australia, and I'm the director there, and look after UK, Ireland, and Europe.
Yes, Europe as well.
Yeah. In my spare time, I cover Europe as well.
Excellent. That's a long way to go, isn't it?
We're doing some tastings over there, but a lot of our activity this year has been in the UK. So it's trade promotion, consumer promotion, obviously like the wine show that we're at this week, and also talking to the press about the fantastic wines that Australia are making at the moment.
New to the role. How long have you been with?
6 months, yeah.
6 months, so still quite early days. Have you got your hand on the Aussies yet?
Well, I've had my hands on the Aussies before,
really?
To speak. Having worked with Lindemans and Rosemount and Penfold, so yeah, it's great to be back working with Australia.
Excellent, excellent. How are you getting on with the Aussies? Because they are a fickle bunch of people.
Well, coming from a Kiwi, I guess you would say that, wouldn't you, Chris?
I would.
It's great. I think there's some really passionate winemakers out there, some really exciting things happening. I think it's about getting those stories out to all of the relevant audiences and really showing what's happening with Australia at the moment.
What is happening with Australia at the moment?
I think what's interesting and what we're certainly seeing a lot of interest from the trade and from consumers is finding out about new regions and also new varieties. We're doing a lot of promotion about the regions of Australia. We've got 64 GIs, so specific geographically nominated regions. So
GIs, geographical indicators?
Yes, yeah, yeah. So for instance, and which 85% of the wine has to come from that region. So new areas like Franklin River in Western Australia, also the Great Southern producing some amazing Rieslings. And then we've just recently done some promotion around Mornington Peninsula and also Tasmania in terms of Pinot Noir. There's a lot of exciting things happening.
Cool. Obviously, I've got to ask the question, how's the drought going?
Dry.
Dry.
Actually, no.
I've never known an Aussie to be dry. That's the funniest thing.
I was out there in August and actually they had quite a bit of rain, but obviously it's an ongoing problem and something that Australia is looking at how going forward to ensure that wine production out there is sustainable and profitable in terms of moving into new areas and how growers and producers, wineries themselves cope with diminishing water reserves and also the cost of water itself. Mm-hmm. And also from an ethical stroke environmental point of view in terms of how much water is needed and also the areas therefore that are going to be more suitable for production in the years to come.
The old Murray Darling is, it used to be the backbone of the Australian wine industry. It still really is in terms of volume. People talk about moving more to the coastal regions. Do you think the Murray Darling is still going to be a big powerhouse even with these new coastal regions coming in?
I don't have a crystal ball. So in terms of how long it's going to be sustainable and also in terms of whatever government regulation or state regulation may come in terms of redirection of water and whether wine is considered to be a primary need in that sense. So I guess it's really up for debate, and therefore I think the industry is, you know, and any producer will be looking at different alternatives and different ways of and different areas for producing wine. But it's still obviously there is the availability at the moment, but going forward, then new areas will be sought, or increasingly more different areas will be sought.
Mm-hmm. Wines Australia came up with the strategy Regional Heroes, mm-hmm. That you launched about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
I think it's about 2 years ago, and yeah, it's basically on the back of the Directions 2007 report, yeah.
And Regional Heroes started really focusing on individual produced niche high quality producers?
No, it's based on 15 different regions and then varietals matched to those regions. So it's not producers, it's regions paired with varieties. So we're not saying, Margaret River Chardonnay or Mornington Peninsula Pinot Noir, it's taking what are starting to be the sort of the most well-known and the most highly regarded varieties from those regions. It's not saying that's what all the only region, the only varietal they make, but it's basically starting to drive an awareness of region and varietal match.
Okay. How does that fit in with this GI stuff? Because the GIs were quite they're almost foisted upon the Aussies part of their getting into the Europe. Have they been intermeshed at all, or are they quite separate in terms of strategies?
All of the regional heroes are specific GIs. So I guess it's really building on the GIs, but to go out and try and promote 64 GIs all at once would be far too complex. Mm-hmm. And whenever we're doing tastings now, we're not using all 15 regions all at once. It's about taking a number of regions so that you can show quite good comparisons and contrast the wines from specific regions. So Pinot Noir, for instance, from maybe three different states that pick up the three different regional heroes that we have within the programme. So it's starting to provide a framework for understanding regionality within Australia. And I think it's using the GI framework, but just making it not necessarily simplistic, but easy to understand as a starting point. And then people can, if they want to, move on from that.
Do you think Australia would have gone down the GI route had Europe sort of imposed, or not so much imposed, but made it easier to work within the European frameworks? My understanding of how the GIs worked is you wanted to get your wines into Europe, or keep your wines in Europe, and one of the requirements was to accept the appellation control label rules in Europe. So you had to stop calling port, or Rutherglen port, and as a result you effectively developed your own set of branding.
Regional
branding.
Yeah.
Was the fact that the Europeans have said, look, you can't...
I think it would have happened anyway. If that's a question I think you're asking, in terms of evolution of the Australian industry and new generations of winemakers coming, in any industry, not just the wine industry, it's about finding what's the next thing, what's the next level of complexity that winemakers can bring to a proposition. And regionality was, it had existed, but obviously maybe European, that regulation obviously helped it on its way. But I think it definitely would have happened irrespective.
You used to go to the supermarket and southeastern Australia was the wine that you purchased. It was from the region southeastern Australia, which is pretty much all of Australia. In terms of as a percentage, do you see it eroding? But how much do you see it eroding towards more specific regions like Yarra Valley or...
I think that's a much more of a long-term evolution. I don't know the figures precisely, but probably about 40% of Australia's production is coming from more specific GIs that people would recognise, i.e. as Yarra Valley or Adelaide Hills or the Barossa.
Yep.
So I think that, that is going to grow, definitely. But there will always... And again, obviously, we've talked earlier about in terms of water supply, but there will always be a backbone coming from, a broader appellation, Southeast Australia.
Wines Australia is funded by the big... Well, it's funded by everybody, but let's face it, it's the big boys who pay the most amount to it.
Yeah, but you say that, Chris. I think what's interesting is that there are a lot of, you take the industry as a whole, there's 2,600 producers, okay? There are probably about four major producers within that. And it's the same with our membership in terms of, yes, we have about four very big producers, but then we have 50, small boutique size and medium sized producers.
Do they all have the same voting rights? Like if I'm Foster's, do I have the same voting rights as...
Well, we don't necessarily have voting rights in terms
of... How do you set strategy?
How do we set strategy? In terms of, it's basically our strategy has flowed out of the Directions 2007 report. So it's about, I see very much our role in terms of maintaining and building awareness for our brand champions, so our big wineries, our big producers, Penfolds, Jacobs Creek, Hardy's, Wolf Glass, but really extending people's awareness of what Australia stands for, which is where Regional Heroes comes in, developing that awareness. It's not going to happen overnight, but we need to start showing people that I don't think you can talk about Australia in general terms anymore. It is so diverse in terms of what's happening, in terms of new varieties coming on stream, new regions, and that's the excitement, that's the beauty of the country as a wine producing area, and something that we want to encourage people to explore.
Innovation has always been a sort of watchword for the Aussies. They're certainly innovators.
Yeah.
And they're not afraid to try things, which is always brilliant. You know, it's a fantastic thing. If we were sitting here in 10 years' time, what would you like to be talking about?
Wow, that's a very good question. I'd like to be talking about how people have embraced and seen Australia evolve and a greater awareness of the fact that Australia can produce fantastic quality between £7 and £15. I'm not sure that overnight everybody's going to start buying wine at those price points, but if in 10 years' time we've been able to increase a lot of people, or even, you know, 25% of the people that buy Australian wine today, considering that one in every five bottles of wine bought in the UK is Australian, if we can, you know, encourage a percentage of those people to trade up in their purchases and to discover regions like Mornington Peninsula, Orange, Great Southern, I would feel that I'd be pretty pleased with what myself and my team have done, and also all of the distributors in the UK.
Okay. One of the things Australia's always been quite strong in is ladders, you know, brand ladders. You know, you have an entry-level product, yeah. You have the next tier and the next tier up. To me, the concept of this regional heroes is about putting another ladder on top of there, mm-hmm. and people call it premiumization, which is almost a dirty word now in some categories. Do you think that this regional hero stuff is about just shifting the perception of quality and dragging up the perception of maybe some of the more basic wines that are produced? Or have I got the strategy wrong?
I don't know that dragging up the perception is maybe quite the word that I would use.
You're in PR.
I think it's extending. It's showing people, you know, in terms of, A, you've got people that know Australia in terms of maybe what they go in and buy in a supermarket and they see, you know, is very visible in terms of the brand champions. So, yeah, it's obviously to give them the opportunity to say, look, here's a regional proposition from Australia. Try this. Yes, it's a little bit more expensive, but then you can compare and contrast. It's also, I think, our role to bring people across, potentially from the old world, that have an understanding or maybe a more evolved understanding of regionality, and show them the equivalents that they can buy from Australia in terms of, for instance, Pinot Noir or Cabernet from the Margaret River, and give them a comparison to what they may be buying from Bordeaux or from Burgundy.
Okay. One of the problems that, from my point of view anyway, that Australia has encountered is that they've produced wines at the budget level very well, and the wines, you know, at the price point that they produce, you know, the quality is good. But that if you're competing at that price level, things like exchange rates mean that consumers flow where the supermarkets point them. And you look at things like South Africa now. South Africa is starting to do very well. Their rand or mm-hmm. their currency is quite weak. Australian currency is quite strong relative to, say, the pound, mm-hmm. Which means that you're seeing a movement in terms of where people are purchasing wine, because it's not necessarily about the premiumization of the wine. It's what the discounts that the supermarkets can get and how they're going to flog their wines. Are you worried, or do you worry that by maybe targeting too high a point, you've still got a lot of volume to shift, mm-hmm. That you're going to just be sort of left out there with the South Africans or some other country coming in and copying what was a very effective model for Australia, while you're taking your eye off the ball and maybe moving, and currencies are moving against you. You know, everybody's catching up with Australia. Australia got well ahead of everybody, you know, early on. But
sure. I think we have to be very sensitive to market conditions. We can't obviously control currency. That's out of our control. But at the same time, you know, the industry has to be profitable. So in terms of making wine to a price point, you know, is that long-term, a sustainable model for Australia would be the question I think we need to ask. I think it's really important that Australia has an entry point that is accessible for people coming into wine drinking, because it's where, you know, the new generation or the next generation of wine drinkers, you know, come in and discover Australia as a producing country. So doing things like the wine show, getting glasses in hands at, you know, from wines, from supermarkets, from Tesco, from Sainsbury's is really important. So we need to keep fueling that. But I think also we need to to encourage people to explore at higher price points within Australia and see comparative value. But yeah, I think it's about having those two, the scales equally weighted, and making sure that we're bringing in new people to the category as much as extending the knowledge of people that are already there.
I was talking to David Cox from New Zealand Wine Growers earlier today, and they had what I would best describe as a savalanche last year. Their 08 crop was huge compared to previous years. 09 crop's going to be about the same.
Yeah.
And they've seen prices erode on New Zealand wines. They have dropped. That's because their supply-demand is out of balance. If Australia's supply and demand is out of balance at the moment, and you're seeing it's difficult to maintain higher price points. If you're aiming to go for slightly more premium wines, your demand, your supply is going to have to contract quite a bit. Let's face it, the Aussie governments didn't do themselves any justice when they started giving people tax breaks for planting vineyards. Do you think that there's going to be a big correction in terms of vineyard size within Australia?
I think there needs to be a rationalisation. I think the whole industry, and we're seeing people exit from the industry, you know, growers exit from the industry because it isn't a sustainable business for them, and there isn't as much demand from the larger companies. I think there needs to be, I mean, what some people would quote that currently it's 20% in terms of, you know, we need to pull back by about 20%. And it is finding that that balance of sustainable and profitable production, but still it's really important to have, you know, a relative entry point that people can come into the category with. So, yeah, I wish I had a magic wand to be able to do it overnight. But, you know, Australia's enjoyed fantastic growth in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And I think it's done, you know, it's done amazing things for the category of wine as a whole, in terms of bringing people into wine drinking,
and democratizing,
democratizing wine drinking, and making it, you know, okay to have a glass on a Friday night and not be embarrassed about wine drinking. And I think it's now, you know, Australia is in that period of evolution of really kind of, realignment and finding, you know, where is that. You know, it's a fine balance in wine production. It's an agricultural product. We're all at the mercy of Mother Nature, and Mother Nature is doing some interesting things at the moment, as well as currency, as well as, you know, a lot of external factors. So it'll be an interesting couple of years. But I wouldn't have taken the job if I wasn't excited about the potential and what's happening now and what I think is going to happen and is there to be talked about and enjoyed at the end of the day.
Okay, so what are the things as a wine consumer I should be keeping an eye out for in Australia?
I think exciting things, it's small, but I think it's going to grow, are things like varietals like Tempranillo. Also, I know Yolumba are doing some work with Vermentino, Verdello. I tasted a delicious Verdello from the Hunter Valley the other day.
I tasted a very average one from New Zealand.
Hey, 1-0 Australia.
It's the only one you'll get.
So different varieties and also like these, I was talking about Rieslings from Great Southern, Mornington Peninsula, yeah, I fell in love with when I was out there. I just think there are, you know, and it's also broadening people's perceptions of Australia. You know, you can ski in Victoria. You can, you know, Australia is not just an amazing, beautiful sunset beach.
Certainly not Melbourne.
Well, Melbourne's great.
Great for shopping.
So definitely in terms of exciting new varieties, and also in terms of this new young generation of winemakers, there's a lot of guys and girls, I would say women first. There's a lot of guys out there making amazing wines in their 20s, in their 30s that, you know, have travelled a lot and they've also seen historically what Australia's done and obviously want to make their own mark. So they're going to bring something different to the equation and to the whole, you know, Australian proposition, which is fantastic and really exciting. And I think there's also the food culture in Australia is really advancing. Melbourne has a really diverse dining scene, as does Sydney and Adelaide, and that's encouraging more and more. And I would say, you know, Australia makes probably the best coffee, even better than the Kiwis in the world. You know, there's a fantastic food culture there, and that's only going to increase, you know, people's and winemakers' passion for what they do and sort of striving to make even better wines.
Can you recommend three wines
No.
I know. Three wines that are generally available.
Yeah.
That you think represents where Australia is going now.
Okay. I'm going to do three maybe quite eclectic things. The Pusey Vale Prima Riesling. So that's a 9% alcohol Riesling. And I just think in terms of what people potentially may be looking for, slightly lower alcohol, but still with bags of flavour. Absolutely delicious wine.
Is it high in sugar or they just managed to keep the ripeness down?
Good question. I can't remember how many grams per litre, but I tasted it and I thought, wow, that's delicious. Paxton Shiraz, so from McLaren Vale, they're biodynamic guys making fantastic wine.
We've had them on the show. It's Dave Paxton?
Dave Paxton, yeah. Some really interesting wines. So, God, we better take it out of South Australia, otherwise everybody else is going to hit me over the head. And not necessarily where Australia is going, but I think in terms of great value, we were pouring last night the Jacob's Creek Blanc de Blanc, and under a tenner and absolutely delicious. And you put it in a blind tasting, yeah, it would beat quite a few, or you'd be hard-pressed to know that it wasn't bubbles from champagne.
Yeah. I've got a Jacob's Creek Pinot Noir, the fizz, yeah, in my fridge at home, which I bought because I've been meaning to try it for a long time and I haven't had a chance to. You never get to see it in the shows, so.
Okay.
But I'm going to have a drink of that later on.
Okay. Well, the sparkling, the
Blanc, Blanc de Blanc.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty okay. Good indeed. So there you go. So you've got some Shiraz, you've got some sparkling, and you've got some Riesling.
Fantastic. All right then, Lisa. Thanks very much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
Cheers.